Broadcasting live from the Chicago Board of Trade, this is the home of the Chicago Bears, ESPN Chicago. And this is Waddle and Sylvie, WMVP, WTBC, HD2 Chicago, a Good Karma Brands radio station.
Come on, Jesse.
MLB insider Jesse Rogers.
Jesse Rogers.
Jesse Rogers. Jesse Rogers. You found out that you were going to be a Cardinal. How, Tommy?
Jesse Rogers.
Joins Waddle and Sylvie.
Look like you're swinging for the lake there.
Tyler, put out a poll.
Call her daddy. What is it? Call my daddy.
I'm a big believer in protection.
On ESPN Chicago.
That's right. A lot of Jesse Rogers talk all day today. He's doing an investigative report for us. He's been all over the labor issue. He gave us a backhanded compliment when we were out to dinner yesterday, saying that he was surprised and impressed with our baseball conversation.
God, you guys aren't so stupid after all.
For guys who aren't around, Jesse Rogers brought to you by your local Chicagoland Toyota Dealer Association. Toyota, let's go. This is what's up, Jesse?
That was not a backhanded compliment. That was a real compliment, Waddle. He's misrepresenting me. What I was saying is I couldn't believe some of the insights you were making because they were insights I feel like I would get from being inside the locker room. And you guys had a good feel on some things that normally a reporter would need to be inside the room for. So that was the compliment.
Ah, okay. Yeah, we have great intuition here. That's right. I was more interested in the fact that you were actually a contributing member of your football team as a senior.
Oh, that worked out perfect. That's like your ex-girlfriend sitting at the next table and you start to walk away and she's like, oh my God, I miss you so much, that kind of thing. Because Sylvie was not buying my football stories. And then we go to leave and the guy next to us says, oh, you're the football guy. You're the football star. And I'm like, see, Sylvie, I wasn't lying.
My God, that is awesome.
Tell Waddle about a couple of the plays that you were telling me about.
Oh, so Andy Rudich was the starting Z-back, slot back, Waddle, and he got hurt on day one. He was like the best athlete on the team. I'm sure he's listening right now. So all of a sudden I was second string and promoted to first string. So that position, I was like the fullback in the wishbone.
Okay.
Because they'd move the slot guy around, and I was like 130 pounds. I got my butt destroyed in the middle of the line. And then like I'd run screen passes and just get devoured. We went 2-7. I think I had either one touchdown or one 2-point conversion, one or the other.
That's fantastic. I love it.
Yeah, it was
and the fact that you didn't play as a freshman, sophomore, or junior, you just decided as a senior, I'm going to go play some ball.
It was one of the dumbest decisions by our coach, sorry to say this, because he two-platooned in high school. In other words, it was 11 on defense and 11 on offense. Nobody does that. That's the reason I went out for the team, thought maybe I got a shot at this, and end up second string in the slot there. And then Andy Rudich got hurt, and I ended up playing a lot.
Ah, and then all the ladies were all over Jesse after that.
It was like Friday Night Lights.
What was your nickname back in the day?
Hoss.
Well, oh, my God, since you asked, this is at the time when Jesse the Body Ventura was a big deal.
The Body.
So that was my nickname. I've said that on the air before, not recently.
I don't think Hoss at 135 was probably sticking.
That's the fun of it.
Yeah.
Right. Jesse the Body was obviously.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
Did you have long hair back then?
I had hair. It wasn't long.
Wasn't long?
I had hair.
I could see you with a mullet. I had one. I thought it was awesome.
But Tommy, in all seriousness, I loved it. And this is the one sport. I played all the sports as a kid like you guys. I loved practice. I loved football practice because you ran 100 plays as a wide receiver. In the game, you got like two a game, right? Yeah. You know, or whatever. So I always loved practice as much as the games.
That's awesome.
I was trying to tell Sylvie about his kids. Play football.
Yeah, we were having that discussion that Braxy wants to play. It was great. Great timeout, Jesse. All right. So I said to you, I told you the story yesterday that we were watching CHSN. And that Will Venable on a display shelf while he was doing the interview with Brooke Fletcher, with all the memorabilia, there was pictures, there was a baseball bat, a helmet, and then in the middle there's a cup, a protective cup that players wear. And we wanted to know, was that a prank or is there a reason for why he's displaying the cup?
It's such an anticlimactic answer. It wasn't his office. He was in someone else's office. And so he has no idea
whose office
there was a cup behind him. Rob Baffia, right? What Baffia Meller says.
Ask Meller. Meller, this is a perfect story for Meller, Jesse. Does Meller have any insight as to why the cup is there? And is it always there? I didn't notice it when I saw the interview a day before.
Right, because maybe he was in his own office. No, Meller and I, like, accosted Venable after the scrum with all the reporters. We're like, we built it up. We're like, Will, we have a very important question for you. I mean, I didn't even send in the audio because it was so, like, no, it's not my office. I have no idea what you guys are talking about. So Meller doesn't know why it was in there either. And it's, like I said, it's not the manager's office. So
Is it someone involved with the team? Or is it, like...
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, we still want to find out why someone is displaying a cup. Rob Baffia, whoever that is.
He's the equipment manager.
Okay.
Yeah.
So maybe
still. Why. I mean, there's not a jock strap up there.
Maybe it's like a player gifted it to him as the equipment manager.
I would love to know.
I'm taking the weekend off. So Meller, this is on you.
Yeah, okay. I'm sure Meller would love this. This is right up Meller's alley.
It is up his alley for sure. He's smiling right now, giving me the finger. But
he's smiling because his baseball team's 2 games over .500 as well. That's why he's smiling.
He is. And look, Silby, I think you said it like 2 weeks ago, maybe even longer. This is no longer a good story. This is a good or at least decent team. It's all relative. Obviously, the record is the record, but they're in a division and a league that is depressed right now. Literally and figuratively, I was just in the Tigers clubhouse. It's kind of depressing. They're underachieving. So is so are a lot of teams in the American League. It's given a chance to this White Sox team. And I've said for a couple weeks now, I keep looking under the hood at talking to people in the game. You have 3 sluggers. You have a bullpen. You have a chance. Now, if they really want to add on in July, it has to be that starting staff. They're piecing it together a little bit today. Another opener. They've done well with openers. Eichert's going to open for Eric Fetty, who has had some struggles. I think that's a smart move. Limit Fetty at the top of the order and, you know, give them a different look a little bit. So, there's holes, obviously, to this team. Maybe the bottom of the order isn't always great. But I think it's not the nice little story on the South Side. It's now 50-plus games. It's a good team.
What are people telling you around baseball, if anything, or even around the White Sox and what you think about what Davis Martin is doing?
I heard your discussion earlier, and I would not have put him at the top of biggest surprises. I mean, certainly second or third, but not the top. I just feel like sometimes you get a pitcher that pops, you know, and it can come out of nowhere. I don't know. I know Murakami hit 56 home runs, but when you talk about so many scouts and team said, I don't believe in it. And then he does what he does. And he's up there in rarefied air with Tomei and Frank Thomas. I think I'd put Murakami at the top of the list. But the people that talk about Davis Martin just can't believe the control that he has with his off-speed pitches. I mean, he is putting that ball exactly where he wants to. I mean, the curve, the sinker, the cut, it's all moving exactly where I think it, where he wants to have it move. And that's what people are talking about. They just can't believe the off-speed stuff, the breaking stuff is as good as it is. But I put Murakami at the list of biggest surprises because so many teams said the swing and miss in the zone is going to kill him. He's not going to have success. And it turns out he's having plenty of it.
It's really interesting. We've talked to a couple of people, including DJ today, when we asked him about Davis Martin's success. He also talked about how he was reading the body language of the guys. Like, he's really kind of like in that Maddox fashion, thinking about everything and what the tendencies are for all these batters. He's like a thinking man's pitcher. And I don't mean to say that to diminish his physical skill, but it's the combination of both, it looks like, that has everyone baffled.
It's a great observation by DJ. I think Smoltz went on social media recently and kind of, was saying pitchers don't read bats and the opponent as much as they should. And he seems like he's doing that. I think reading swings is kind of a lost art. That's something Smoltz was talking about. And Davis Martin has a little bit of a throwback ability in him. So maybe it's a combination. His stuff just popped and he arrived mentally in a place where he can understand the game at a high level. So I do feel like it does happen for pitchers, even if they didn't show it previously. So I'm not saying it's not a surprise. I'm just saying he's not my top guy.
You mentioned Fetty a little bit earlier. Like, I know they're going to, they're going to put somebody else in as an opener, as you mentioned. But are they running out of patience. Maybe that's the wrong word because I'm not suggesting they don't like him, but he hasn't pitched well enough to stay in the rotation or be part of what you're trying to accomplish at this point, has he, Jess?
No, he hasn't. He was brought in for as an innings eater, a veteran, not necessarily knowing this was going to be a contending team. I mean, it's not. It doesn't take a leap to believe that he won't be in the rotation down the stretch. You know, hopefully Hagen Smith is up here. Hopefully Nolan Schultz comes back. Hopefully David Sandlin sticks and is good. So there's other options on the horizon. And, yeah, I think at some point, if they're in real contention, they'll move on from Fetty as a starter.
Yeah.
Joe, like you mentioned the going for a pitcher and looking at it. In a month from now, Jesse, let's say they're still doing the same thing. They're on this pace and they're like 5 over .500 and they're right in the thick of the wild card race. Will Chris Getz like try to add at the deadline to make a postseason with this team?
The answer is yes, but he's not going to go outside his comfort zone. He's not going to do anything to make him uncomfortable in terms of who he trades. Not this year. Brandon Montgomery's not going anywhere. I mean, Sam Antonio, whoever it is, minor league or major league team, it would have to be, you know, back-end type of stuff. You know, their bullpen's good, but you never have enough bullpen arms. It's hard to find starters at the deadline, but maybe you can find a number five and a bullpen arm. So the answer is yes, Sylvie, but absolutely not going to do something that's going to be uncomfortable for him and the team in terms of their prospects.
We had two callers today, Jesse, bring up Jacob Gonzalez, the young shortstop in Charlotte, who is having an unbelievable year. And he has not hit like this throughout his minor league career. So far, former first round pick who seems like he's coming into his own at Charlotte. And one White Sox fan said, look, sometimes Charlotte numbers are a little inflated, but these are great numbers. 308, 414, 646 for a 1,060 OPS. He also has 18 homers, 58 RBIs. He's got a good eye, 48 strikeouts, 33 walks. So he gets on base quite a bit. What do you think they're going to want to see from him before calling him up? And when they do call him up, where does he play?
Yeah, he would have to get some time in the outfield. I'm not sure, Meller, has he been, Jacob Gonzalez been in the outfield at AAA? Because I heard talk about it. I don't know if he's actually been out there for a game or not. But that's it. I mean, I said from February on that their infield looked pretty good, and it has played that way. So it's gonna be, you can't crack the left side of the infield, that's for sure. And you really can't crack the right side too much. So he would have to get some time in the outfield. I mean, it's a great problem to have, but there's no rush, right? You're pretty good right now. If you want, at some point he'll get that promotion, and my guess is in the outfield in some manner.
Jess, what do you think will happen with Skubal?
I think he's going to get traded. I just talked to him for about 20 minutes about the labor situation, not really about his situation. News at 10, he doesn't like a salary cap, by the way. I think he's going to get traded. I learned a long time ago, if your season goes south on you, the one thing as an executive you can do is get some value for a pending free agent. And unless they turn this thing around, and who knows, they might, I doubt it, but they might, plenty of time still. I think he's traded August, you know, the deadline's like August 3rd this year. I think he's traded August 2nd or whatever, if he's healthy. I mean, you got to get him back, and he's got to get back pitching, and he's taking bullpens now. And then you need as many starts for other teams to watch him, and I do think he'll get traded. I haven't seen Scott Harris, the old Cubs exec, just yet here. I'm going to go down and say hello to him and feel him out a little bit, see if he'll trade with his old boss, Jed Hoyer, on the north side. But I don't think there's any doubt he's going to get moved, barring them getting back in the race.
There have been some callers who've called in saying the Cubs don't have enough to get a pitcher like that. What do you think? Do they have enough to entice Detroit if they want to get serious?
Oh, they have enough, but is it more than other teams? That's the question. So I guess in some ways maybe they don't have enough. But in a vacuum, they do. Matt Shaw would certainly be a name, or Moises if you have to go that route. So they at least have one major league player they could offer. Now, usually you need a major league ready pitcher back, you know, somebody who's 20, 21, just about to start his major league career. If you're going to trade a great pitcher, maybe that is Jackson Wiggins if he gets back healthy and pitching. So I think they do in a vacuum, but is it more than the Dodgers? Is it more than some of the Milwaukee or somebody? I can't answer that. I don't think so. It's not the deepest farm. They don't have the best reputation, Sylvie, but certainly there's enough there if it's just, hey, it's down to a couple teams and we like Shaw, we like Moises, we like Jackson Wiggins, we like Jefferson Rojas, we like Kevin Alcantara. You know, yes, there's enough there. But there could be another team that offer a top prospect, and, you know, that could change the dynamic.
You know, you mentioned, too, Scooble, like, doesn't love to hear a salary cap. Yeah. Like, how much will this impact top-of-the-line guys, whatever the rules are? And, like, we'll get into this, Jesse, about what it will eventually settle into, whether it's still a luxury type of tax with more of a floor. But, like, what the initial proposal is obviously going to be league-friendly with this $245 million ceiling, and thus when you then have to pay a pitcher between $40 and $50 million, you really take a large chunk out of what else you can do. So is he worried, as you talked to him about that, for what this could mean for a big contract for himself?
Absolutely it is. He does. Now, there is a theory that the biggest stars will still get theirs, and then there's going to be scraps for everyone else. Like, the Stars will eat up a lot of that salary cap, so maybe he gets his. But you can't imagine in a salary cap world there's going to be deals like Juan Soto's or Ohtani. So, yeah, of course he's worried about that. And there's a theory that in November there's going to be a flurry of signings under the old rules, including Scooble if he's healthy, and he might get his that way, and then his contract will be grandfathered in, or however they're phasing in the deals if they do actually have a salary cap. So there's still 1 month of offseason before this really goes south. And I think in November, you might see Scooble sign a big deal.
Any idea how they'll handle deferred contracts as well? That seems to be another hurdle that they're going to have to clear.
Yeah, I think the new rules, they'll eliminate them. But any contract that's already on the books, I think they'll grandfather in and phase this thing in. Here's the bottom line, Tommy. The league will be willing to do anything to accommodate the players if the players accept the salary cap.
Right.
So, no, they're not going to say, Ohtani, you can't have your deferred money. They're not going to do any of that. They'll take 3 years to phase it in if that's what the union wants. They'll do whatever it takes to get that salary cap in place. So I think there's all sorts of maneuverings they can do. I don't have them all in front of me. I don't know them all. But phasing it in, accepting the deferrals as is, and then going forward, different story.
If you were to guess really quick, and then before we move on to the Cubs, if you had to predict when the dust settles, months of this going on, bleeding into next season, do you believe there will be a salary cap?
I'm going to go ahead and say yes. I absolutely could be wrong. I'm going to just say yes. I think eventually the momentum's going to be there. Look, the floor is pretty high at 171. I think people were surprised by that. The ceiling will probably get raised through negotiations. What they're going to do next, in my opinion, the league, they're going to offer all sorts of dollars to young players. They're going to double or triple the minimum. They're going to say salary arbitration after 2 years. You have to know this. Only 25% of players get to free agency, play 6 years or more. Most of them are 3 to 4 year careers. If you pay them good money early, I think the rank and file might cave. I don't know for sure, but it just the other three sports have it. I said this on other shows. I've said this. I keep quoting Theo. If not now, when? When it comes to owners, if not now, when? I mean, this is the time, right? They have fan momentum. The Dodgers are being this Goliath. And I think this is the time. And I just feel like the players eventually might see that.
Yeah,
I could be wrong.
I think lowering the amount of time it takes for you to get to be a free agent is going to be a huge element that the players are going to want, and the owners could use that as one of their, you know, few carrots they have to try and get the players to consent to something that even looks closely like a salary cap.
And remember, whatever the owners offer, if the union accepts a cap, the money is finite. It doesn't matter. You offer it to young players, offer it to old players. It's the money is finite, you know? And so I don't think the league cares how the union splits it up, and what they're going to do is try to get to those young players and get them on their side.
Yeah. All right, Jesse, one question I asked Cubs fans earlier. Now that the losing streak is over and they've won two in a row, the rig's back on the road, pointing in the right direction. Where do you believe they're going to get to?
I heard you earlier, and I agreed with you. 88 to 90 seems like the range we should be focused in on. you know, during the losing skid when most of it was offensive woes, I texted an executive on another team and I said, what do you make of these Cubs? And his response was, I don't know about their bullpen. I'm like, their bullpen? That's the least of their worries right now. They're hitting 170 with runners in scoring position in May. So it's a little bit of a leaky ship on the pitching staff, especially bullpen and starting wise. Now, maybe they get Boyd back and that helps, obviously. But what we've learned about this offense, and I admit I was a little wrong about, is I was right and wrong. It's lengthy, and I thought they'd have enough guys going that if two or three slump, it'll be okay. What I didn't account for, if six or seven slump, then they don't have anything to fall back on. They don't have that home run hitter or two to fall back on. So I guess in this day and age, six or seven guys slumping at the same time is not impossible. So I feel like we are going to see a roller coaster with this offense. There's enough holes in the pitching staff that I don't think they're going to just rush back on this 95 win pace. But yes, the ship is pointing a little bit more in the right direction. And so, look, 88 to 90 is not bad. It's not exactly what you hoped for, though, when the season started.
Are you confident in any way, shape, or form in which Shota you'll see tonight?
I want to think the good one, but, yeah, I don't know. I mean, St. Louis isn't the biggest home run hitting team. It's a tough call, Tommy. I'm very interested to see after two
because
starts.
He's going to be pivotal. Yeah. Who he is over the course of the remaining part of the season is going to really determine, because of all their other pitching injuries, who they're going to be.
Yeah, totally. He went from like a 4 or 5 to all of a sudden they need him to be a 1 or 2, along with Ben Brown, who's been a nice surprise. Yeah, Tommy, I wonder if, okay, it was Shota 2.0 to start the season. He evolved a little bit, moving side to side with his pitches, down low a little bit. But now that they've seen that, have they caught up to that now? Does he have to change back? Remember, he's a smart guy. So I do worry that he's been found out again. I just don't know the answer, but I'm definitely going to be watching closely to see which Shota kind of shows up. Does he go back to something from before? Does he keep evolving? Or how does he handle the problems he's had lately?
All right, Jesse, any other baseball thoughts? Because I want to ask you one more question.
Yeah, Kyle Teal is still, it's not quite happening yet. You know, he's going to start running soon, which reminds me of the Justin Steele update the Cubs had. Like, he's ready to strengthen his arm. Well, that's not great news. You know, I want to see him on the mound. I want to see Kyle Teal in batting practice and actually running. So that thing is still a ways away, and that's unfortunate. He might miss half the season here.
Yeah, it's not good, especially when they can certainly use him and he could take him to another level. Before we let you go, refresh my memory. 2013, were you still on the Hawks beat then before transitioning to baseball?
That was the year I transitioned. I helped out during the finals and then moved on to cover the Cubs that spring.
Because I think we have, when we come back, we're going to play, do you remember the Seabrook game winner? That happened 13 years ago today now.
Oh, it did?
Yeah.
Wow.
For game 7 against, you want to hear this together? We'll play now here.
Sure.
Why wait till the next break?
It's got the Jalmerson wave off too in it.
Oh, so you got both?
Yeah.
All right, take a listen. This was game 7 at the United Center. Hawks and Wings. The Wings had a 3-1 lead in the series before the Hawks won the next two games, and this is game 7.
It's triple back on down to Shaw. Shaw holding, down it back to Jalmerson. Score! And they are waving it off.
Well, there's the wrestle match. Watch the right part of your screen. Stephen Walkham right there.
Congo. That one gloved down by Erickson. Fielder to head now. And Nyquist. Oh, my. He's run into by Bolin. Right back ahead comes Seabrook with a shot. He scores!
That horn, when they hit that horn so many times, and like they had a double walk-off of game 7 of the Western Conference final. Pretty incredible. The first one, Jalmerson's got waved off. So Seabrook, who is a big-time, money-time player in the postseason, he'd even score. And that was one of the more memorable playoff moments from all those Hawks games.
He had such a heavy shot. He was a great shot from the point. And the combination of him and Keith on the back end, like, two different styles. that fit perfectly together. You know, Quinville would break them up and then put them back together, and they had so much success together. But Seabrook was the guy with the big shot.
Yeah, yeah. All right, great stuff, Jesse. Thank you.
Thanks,
right.
Jess.
Great seeing you last night, Sylvie.
It was a good time. We had a good time. There he is, the football star.
See you later, Bronco Nagurski, covering the White Sox tonight.
It's our hoss right there.
Yeah, it's our hoss.
Jesse the Body.
Bam!
Jesse Rogers joining us from The Rate. Always great stuff. And he's a good hang, too, as you know.
Absolutely.
All right, coming up next, we have Aki Zalist.
I almost said shot or no shot.
I almost said shot or no shot there.
Yeah.
Aki Zalist, very similar, obviously. Tyler is out. He was on Cap and J Hood. And Hannah, are you presiding over Aki Zalist?
So it should be White Sox heavy.
No, it's actually not. Thanks, though.
Old people involved?
No.
We'll do that coming up next.
Follow Chicago's Home for Sports on Twitch at ESPN 1000 Chicago. Waddle and Sylvie are back on Chicago's Home for Sports, ESPN Chicago.
It's time for Aki's A-List. From the mind of the man who understands the four P's of Waddle's world, Aki's A-List. A-List. The top questions and topics floating around in Tyler Aki's mind.
Are these really the questions that I was called here to answer?
Aki's A-List on ESPN Chicago.
I think we only got Tyler on the show this week one time, wasn't it? Because we were off Monday. I think it was Wednesday, wasn't it? He was off or Tuesday or was on the other show, and he's done Cap and Jay Hood all week.
Been busy.
So it's good to have Hannah here. Hannah's in place of Tyler filling in with Charlie, who's usually here. Hannah, what's on your list? And what did we call it again? Hannah's what? House of Hannah?
House of Hannah.
Let's start with some NBA / Chicago Bulls. Did you guys hear what Carmelo Anthony had to say about the Bulls recently? We have an audio.
You explain this to me. Yeah. I'm very interested in hearing this.
So let's just listen to it now, and then I'll explain.
A little birdie told me was about to break up in the shop.
Okay.
So I didn't want to walk into that. It was a lot of business that wasn't handled. Contracts and people was leaving and coaches was leaving. It was whispers. So I didn't want to deal with that. And I was already comfortable here. So the only place I'd have left for would have been Chicago.
Gotcha. Yeah, man. Yeah, that ain't good enough.
So basically, Carmelo Anthony went on the podcast recently talking about back in 2013, 2014. He wanted to come to Chicago, but just it wasn't a good place to be, and it just everything was kind of a mess, and I think it reflects the Chicago Bulls as a whole of what's been happening for God knows how long. But it's just like, how was that an issue for these stars when you're supposed to be the Chicago Bulls? And it's just like, hopefully change it has come now so that won't happen anymore. But it was the same issue that happened with the White Sox for so long.
Right.
It's like nobody wanted to, you know, come to the White Sox. The vibes weren't good and blah, blah, blah. The White Sox have turned a corner with that. So I'm hoping that the Bulls can turn a corner, and this might be a big free agent offseason for the Bulls along with the draft picks. I actually have like a list of notable unrestricted free agents.
They got a lot of money.
So, I mean, let me just name some of these names and, like, yes or no if you think the Bulls should target them. LeBron James is the first one, which...
No.
CJ McCollum.
No.
Kristaps Porzingis.
I haven't I read some stuff that they could take his contract? Is he an unrestricted free agent?
Yeah, unrestricted.
Like, that there would be, like, a trade where they get a first-round pick if they take his contract, but I guess he's unrestricted.
How old is he now?
He's older, but like I was only interested. I thought I read something where if you took him,
you got pick,
and you get a pick with him. But if he's unrestricted, I don't think that's the case.
He's only 30 these days.
Because that and very injured. Yeah. But it's something that I'm interested in doing with my open cap space is trading for guys if I get more picks.
Right.
That's
what they need.
Because it's not a star studded. There's a couple guys in Denver, right?
No, it's not. Yeah, like we got Tobias Harris, Anfernee Simons, which
he was on the Bulls. Yeah.
Yeah, John Collins. We got old friend Nikola Vucevic.
No.
Norman Powell, Harrison Barnes, Colin Sexton, Rui Hachimura, Kevin Herter, Kobe White, Ayo Dosunmu, Dean Wade, Robert Williams III. That's like, it's not really star.
No.
But you could get some, like Dean Wade honestly kind of interests me.
This is the bad contract summer to me.
Yeah.
Like, I think you, like, Jakob Poeltl, I think it's like the Raptors just made the playoffs. They gave him a big deal that they would love to get out of, I'm sure. And like they're kind of a team that's ascending. Like I know like Ja is sort of the biggest name out there, but to me, like that, those are the kind of contracts where it's like,
yes,
this is a team that's kind of up on the rise, and you can help them get there by taking on their garbage.
Today's big news with the Bulls was Sean Sweeney. Sean Sweeney, the assistant coach in San Antonio, who's very valuable to that franchise. And the Bulls were very high on. The Bulls like a lot of these top assistants who have been really good at player development. And Orlando signed him as their head coach today. The question becomes, did he choose Orlando over the Bulls, or was he not the Bulls' top target? Could it be Chris Quinn from Miami? Could it be the interim coach? What's his name in Portland? I mentioned him earlier.
Splitter.
That's what I want to know. And do we have to be apprehensive if the Bulls already missed out on their top choice in Sean Sweeney?
I mean, if you're Sean Sweeney, which job is more attractive? The Orlando job or the Bulls? Obviously it was Orlando because they're in the playoffs. They have a good young team already assembled.
I think Billy Donovan told you everything you needed to know.
Right.
Billy Donovan was more interested in coaching Orlando than he was the Bulls.
Billy Donovan, they said in one of the tweets, he was one of the finalists for the Magic job. So he went and interviewed for the Magic job as well. So I guess, I don't know. We'll see what happens with that. But it's going to be a very interesting, transformative Bulls summer between free agents, the draft, new head coach. So
I do have a sense internally of being open-minded. I don't know if being naive, but I just feel open-minded that maybe it'll work.
If you get the guy like Chris Quinn, who has been with Eric Spoelstra and Pat Riley for so many years, and he's been there, he's done that. That's the essence of what you want in an organization. Now, they still need a star, Miami. But what Miami has always done is maximized the players
they have. Heat culture.
Yeah. So if you could get someone like that, that would be cool. But I don't know. I just don't know. Would you put it past the Bulls now that Billy didn't get the Orlando job that they circle back to?
No,
you're saying Billy, you wouldn't put it past the Bulls, or there's no way of that happening?
I wouldn't put it past the Bulls.
Me neither. Bryson
Graham.
That was probably my question.
Yeah. But, I mean, Billy left them once. He's not coming back. He's not like, oh, yeah, you know what? I couldn't find what I wanted,
really,
so I'm back.
I was getting that Magic job.
Yeah, no.
Sell that to the team.
Please. Yeah.
All right, what else, Hannah?
Did you guys hear or see what happened between J.J. McCarthy and Kyler Murray? They were asked by a reporter, like, kind of, how are things going in Vikings training camp? And this is what they had to say.
With JJ to this point?
It's been great. Obviously, I know he's a younger guy. So any way I can help him, obviously, I feel like, you know, I've played 7 years now, going on eight. So I'm considered a veteran, even though I don't see myself as that. Give him any knowledge that he needs. Again, you know, we're both competitors. And I know, you know, we both want what's best for the team.
Been receptive to hearing criticism?
Of course. Yeah, he's overly receptive, you know, and he's always communicating, asking questions, stuff like that, so it's been good.
What's it been like with Kyler so far?
You know, it's just like two guys in a classroom. You know, he sits on one side, I sit on the other side, and it's the coach's responsibility to teach us and coach us. So,
is there any awkwardness, like, between you two?
Awkwardness, you know, it's just like the same feeling, you know, when you're in high school and there's another person on the other side of the room. That's just kind of how it is. So I wouldn't say there's any awkwardness.
I think JJ's squirming a little bit.
I hear a young guy, and I hear an older, more mature guy as well. I hear, you know, Kyler Murray talk as a guy who's been in the league 7 years, and he, JJ's young too, isn't he? Like, he's,
I think he was drafted when he was 20.
Yeah. So,
don't you also hear a guy?
I hear a guy in Kyler who's confident it's his job.
But don't you also hear a guy with J.J. McCarthy who's pissed? Who's pissed that they're probably giving up on him? And who still wants to do everything he can to beat out the older guy?
Yeah, he's probably frustrated, for sure. But, you know, I mean, the organization's got to do what they think is best. So, I mean, I don't think you bring in Kyler Murray for competition. I think you bring in Kyler Murray.
It sounds like, I was reading, like, Kevin Seaver and some of the, like, Vikings, like, this one is kind of over before it even began. Like, it really sounds like that the two performances are just in sort of different worlds right now. And I guess based on what I've been seeing is like they're kind of entering their own Justin Fields, Caleb Williams thing, where a big portion of the fan base wants to hold on to the quarterback that the team has probably moved on from emotionally, or at least like in all sense of purposes. So good luck to the Vikings if they got a little Caleb versus Fields.
I always hope that JJ, you know, I'd still do that. It'll work out. He's, you know, his dad's a great guy. He's good family. He's a good kid. He had a lot of success, obviously, at Michigan. But it just, I mean, if you take a step back and you look at it, I mean, you read the tea leaves. It's Kyler Murray's job to basically lose.
Both times the Bears played him, he had bad first three quarters and rallied them in game one and nearly rallied them to win in game two.
I don't think there have been really good moments for him. There really have, but there haven't been enough of them, I think, for them to go forward feeling 100% secure that JJ's
that was his first year, though, wasn't it? Because didn't he sit out basically his whole rookie year? So he was hurt his rookie year, right? And then his first year, how many games did he play? 11? Because he missed some time last year too. Like I just feel I understand, but I feel like
he's played 10 total games in the NFL.
It's quick to give up on a first round pick.
Yes.
I know what they had to do. They had to go and get a guy who's cheap for them because Arizona is doing their paying. So they're not paying Kyler Murray a lot of money, but 10 games is awfully quick to give up on a quarterback.
Yeah, no, you're right. It's 2 years, but it's only 10 games. I'm with you. And I don't think they're giving up, but I don't think they bring Kyler Murray in with the intention of using him as a backup. I think that, you know.
But he is cheap, so you can rationalize it.
He is, he's also a guy that you had to put it into his contract. Hey, you have to spend a certain amount of time studying because he was busy playing video games, allegedly.
Well,
all the time.
Isn't that then a check against him? So, like, if you're Kevin O'Connell and you know you have a guy who you like and you drafted, but then what if he does beat out Kyler, and you're not paying Kyler that money.
That O'Connell wanted to keep Sam Darnold. You know, so, like, I hope it works for JJ for the reasons I mentioned. But, again, with Kyler Murray's background, I don't think you bring him in unless your intention is to start him.
But he's, like you just said, A, he's cheap, and he's not been the hardest worker. So if JJ McCarthy does beat him out, why wouldn't you go with JJ?
Who's running first team right now?
It's not like you signed Kyler Murray to a $25 million deal.
No.
That he's hurting your salary cap. You got him at the perfect scenario.
I personally don't think that this is an open competition. I think this is Kyler Murray is here to start, and if for whatever reason it goes south, then JJ's going to get another opportunity.
I think it'll be.
I could be wrong, but.
They both took snaps today. Yeah. I mean, like.
It's early, but they're going to get snaps.
The reason they drafted JJ McCarthy is because they wanted to get on the like rookie quarterback into that universe where you can build around a cheap option. And now that they have more or less built around that quarterback, except they don't really have the quarterback, like you can just insert the guy who is also cheap, who's making a vet minimum because Arizona's paying him like $40 million or whatever it is. So like I guess it's just where I end up landing. Like I don't think this is a situation where they're going to try to give McCarthy as many opportunities to like make, they're not going to give him the head start that I think we see a lot of times with young quarterbacks and veterans. But like, if you wanted to sign a backup, you probably would have just gone out and signed Tua, you know?
Ooh.
Like, I think that's a guy you have. But
why? Because he's unhealthy and he's not
Falcons
that good.
The Falcons did it. They have Michael Penix. He's not healthy.
Isn't Penix hurt right now?
He's always hurt.
Yeah.
I think the Vikings look at Kyler Murray and say, hey, here's a guy that in 2024 played 17 games, completed 69% of his passes for 3,850 yards, 21 touchdowns, 11 interceptions. That's, you know, it's okay.
And under Kevin O'Connell,
I can get the most out of him. Now, there's another side of this that his style isn't necessarily the style that Kevin has coached before. So you now have that element.
I'm curious how that fits.
I think as Bears fans, we should all feel comfortable that there isn't a great degree of certainty at the most important position. Conversely, you could also feel if anybody could get Kyler Murray right, it might be Kevin O'Connell.
When it comes to like under center stuff, Cliff Kingsbury and Kevin O'Connell probably couldn't be further apart.
Correct. So it's going to be interesting for sure. And I wish JJ the best because, like I said, we all know his dad's a great, great family and everything. So, and you're right. 10 games in the NFL is by no stretch enough time to make the decision whether or not a kid can play.
Think about sitting out that whole year with an injury. So you couldn't get really any reps. You really didn't learn anything that first year. It's not like Patrick Mahomes, who is going through every practice his rookie year when Alex Smith was starting. McCarthy was hurt.
Well, and then to see Sam Darnold go out there and lead the team to, you know, the postseason and throw 40 touchdown passes. And, you know, JJ had some good moments, especially towards the end of the season. I think he played well against Washington where they won 31-0. He played well against Dallas. So, I mean, there are some moments on his resume. So
I think if anything, maybe it'll be a short leash situation. Like, the second
with Murray.
Kyler Murray, it's like, okay, JJ, you're in.
Well, I would also say, you know, you kind of read some of the comments made by JJ, you know, Justin Jefferson, and, you know, you just get there is an angst in the building. From the outside looking in, you feel that, come on now, we got Hockenson, we got Addison, we got Jefferson, we got guys, we got to get more out of the passing game than we've gotten out of it. So, I like a lot of controversy in all the other teams in our division. That's all good for me.
Henny, you have a quick one?
Yeah, I lied. I'm going to talk about the White Sox really quick. MLB posted their top 10 hitter power rankings. And I'm scrolling and I'm like, okay, Murakami is probably like 5 or 4. He's not on there. He's not even in the top 10. And I get it because he strikes out a lot, right? Like it's either strikeout, home run, or
that's
walk.
Who Schwarber is,
but
though, isn't
Schwarber's,
it?
Yeah, Schwarber is number 4 on this list. Yeah. No, he's number 3. So I'm like,
and he's having the exact same type of season as Schwarber.
And it just doesn't really make sense to me why Murakami's not on there.
Because they're right now they like the White Sox still haven't gotten the national writers' respect.
Right. For Murakami like, has that's what doesn't make sense.
Yes,
he's everywhere.
Right, he is everywhere. But like in the power rankings, they somehow went down this week and significantly. I don't know how.
Look, you're going to have to, unfortunately, they're going to have to prove it until people give them their just respect.
And they can. And they can continue to do it. It's all right in front of them. All right, good stuff from Hannah and Aki's A-List. Coming up next, what do we look at when we see these Bears videos? I made a comparison to it earlier when you see these splash plays from a practice in OTAs at the end of May. So how should we digest those? We'll talk about that coming up next.
Listen to us now, live on the ESPN Chicago app. Listen to the show in HD at 100.3 HD2 FM. Listen now on ESPN 1000. This is Waddle and Sylvie, ESPN Chicago. Chicago's home for sports.
A lot of people loving what they heard yesterday from Ben Johnson. We played a lot of it. Buying stock on Luther Burden, saying things are a lot better as they hit the ground running offensively. Then the videos have come out where, you know, you saw the Xavier Thomas touchdown. You saw the Roma Dunze catch and touchdown. And this is the one where Caleb was rolling out doing that jump throw.
OTA porn.
It is a thirst trap. It's a thirst trap. But, like,
I haven't heard that. I've heard the term, but I don't. What's a thirst trap?
Someone, like, who's just trying to get attention and you know, is sending out a picture.
Post a hot picture yourself.
Yeah,
hot picture.
Thank you.
But
feeling spicy.
Like, I don't think any of us really are like, oh, this means the Bears are going to go 12-5. I think
none
we
of
do.
Us other than Zetterman.
No, but we do enjoy, like, it's better than not seeing that
it's
sort
sick
of stuff.
As hell.
Yeah, it's just like fun to watch. I know a May thing doesn't mean anything in the grand scheme of September, October, November, December, January.
Better than
February.
Watching him throw 5 interceptions.
Yes, I don't know what it means. It's we've always told you this. It's just like when we talk about interceptions, that we go there and we're going to report what we see, and you create the image in your mind on what it means. It's very early, but it's also very fun. It's fun to see guys running around making plays on a football field.
Yeah, it's better than watching Mitch trip and fumble.
Exactly.
That's all.
So, yeah, I'm not printing up Super Bowl tickets just because of the videos, but I do consume it, and I do love watching it. And I think everyone should enjoy it in that context. Enjoy it the way you want.
It's a nice reminder of how unbelievably talented his arm is. Like, yeah, and 67 yards in the air.
And how talented the entire offense can be.
Oh, I think they're going to be dirty.
If that connection
really is dirty this year, like if they're not a top three scoring offense this year, I'd be surprised. It would tell me they've had issues up front, maybe with injuries or somebody didn't.
Ben is
last year sixth.
Ben's
like
coordinated a top five offense, I think, by DVOA every year since he became an offensive coordinator.
Yeah, I mean, like this is why he's here, brother. He better be top five this year. What were they last year? I think they were top 10 in yards and top 10s, 10 in top 10s.
I didn't realize were they sixth? Were they that high?
And let's go points. Points per game. Ooh, no, maybe I wasn't. Maybe I'm a little excited, too excited. They scored 26 points per game, which was 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. They were ninth in points, and in yards, they were sixth in yards.
Okay, they were
I think that, but by the way, in terms of points, they scored 25.9 points per game. The next three teams above them were all 27 and change. This team should score 28 points a game this year.
By expected points added per game, they were seventh. And that's with a sub 60% completion percentage.
Yeah, so come on. Let's get on this.
Yeah, I think that's the next step,
if you
right?
You assume that gets better.
The accuracy and the completion percentage and early scoring.
Right. Think about how infrequently they got off to a good start.
Always chasing.
Their season didn't really get off to a good start, right? In that Dallas game.
And then hopefully if they do get out to a lead, that will help the Bears pass rush too.
Think about it. Quarterback's going to be better, right? Coach is going to be even better.
Yes.
I think the quarterback will be better. I think your group of receivers will be better. I think Colston Loveland will be better. The only questions I have is who's going to be your center? Who's going to be your left tackle? Can the other three guys stay healthy because you're getting older? Now, the offensive line, you know.
Who's your left tackle?
Yeah. So, I mean, there are questions. There's no doubt. Most teams have them.
Who's your center?
That's what I just said. I said the two questions are your center and who's going to be your left tackle.
I think their depth is going to be my number one concern outside of pass rush when we get to training camp. Like, as we start going through.
That's defense. We're talking offense right now.
No, I know. On offense, like, my number one concern is offensive line depth because, like you said, Waddle, these guys were fully healthy last year.
No, they were.
Four or five guys played the whole season, which is very out of character for what those guys were.
That is correct.
I feel like their depth on the offensive line isn't terrible. Like
you got a backup center, whoever it is.
Yeah, you're two centers.
You've got a ton of guys at left tackle. I don't know if any of them can play.
That's the thing, yeah.
I don't know if Ozzie will be healthy.
You have one sort of swing player where you can plug him in as your swing tackle, or you can have him play guard for a little bit.
I'm with you, Charlie. I think you can swing like Braxton Jones if you need to play him
inside.
Wherever. I think you could swing him all over the line. So,
who's also the kid that out of Michigan State?
Yeah, Newman. Newman. They like Newman.
Thayer loves Newman. He's another guard, you know, that they like a lot in a backup.
See, now I'm getting excited. I'm getting a little football buzz going. Yeah, I want to go see the kid. There's two guys I want to see. I want to see them all. But I want to see the new receiver, and I want to see the new tight end. Just kind of want to see kind of how they run their routes and with their body, you know, how they do their stuff. Because those guys are going to get some run this year.
Yeah, so if you are consuming it on Instagram, any social media, these videos from Bears.com, have at it.
Again, let's not forget Jahdae Walker as well.
Yeah.
Who could be a guy that takes another step, too. They're going to score 40 a game. Come on.
All three of those starters should be better at the skill position. Rome should have a better year because, like, and then you hit on Burden and Colston. Like,
Rome, catch the ball, Rome, and stay healthy, and you'll be a great receiver.
Yep. So we can't wait. All right. Thanks for a great week of tuning in to Waddle and Sylvie today. Jesse Rogers and DJ Darren Jackson and DJ and Len will be up coming up next on the pregame show with Jeff Meller. So we'll hopefully have a winning baseball weekend. Thanks to Hannah and Charlie and also Tyler. For Waddle, I'm Sylvie. It's ESPN 1000. Have yourself a great weekend.
Ladies and gentlemen, the weekend.
Waddle, he's gone.
Really excited.
That was a big thrill.
Hi, it's Andre Dawson, including myself, Ed Belfour.
There's a very low percentage of this that is smiles and glory holds.
Who's getting wild tonight? That's what I'm talking about, baby.
No hi from you.
What?
No hi from you.
I'd give him more buys than highs.
Waddle, waddle, waddle. Then he waddled away. He waddle, waddle. Till the very next day.
And thank you to all, and to all a good night.
I just want to say thank you all, and as always, f*** everybody else. I love y'all.